Not available in all counties or cases.
Valley Talk on News Talk 1580 KGAL.
Ann Wickman is with us, and she is involved in canine search and rescue, which we had a fascinating program and visit all about that same topic. Oh, it's been about a year ago now, I think, somewhere in there, with Robin Galloway and others from Search and Rescue. Robin had her dog that was trained for search and rescue. And in fact, Robin's dog was able to locate some human remains that were hidden around the building in sealed up jars in difficult to find spots. And Robin's dog found them literally in seconds in each case. It was amazing.
They are amazing. Yes, Kona is an amazing dog.
So you are acquainted with Robin, actually, and have worked with her, I understand?
Absolutely, yes. I'm with a group that actually did Kona's and Robin's certification in human remains. It's Search and Rescue Dogs of the United States. So I have evaluated Robin, and a wonderful team, wonderful asset to the community.
Ann Wickman, our guest, tell us about yourself and exactly what it is you do for a living. We've sort of got a taste of it there. Let's get the whole picture.
I was always a horses and dogs kid. I became a park ranger in Colorado in 75 and immediately started working with a dog because I was all by myself in the middle of nowhere. And that fueled my love for working with dogs. And then I just started getting more and more into search and rescue. I founded a couple of search and rescue groups and been working on it since 75 and got very heavily into disaster work in the mid-80s and started working on a FEMA committee to develop the national standards for that and curriculum. So I got very heavily involved in that. And just cannot seem to give this up. I'm sitting here with four dogs laying around my living room right now. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, dogs are just incredible, even the ones that aren't necessarily trained to do search and rescue work. It's just great to have a dog as a friend, you know.
Absolutely. They're wonderful partners.
So, Ann, it sounds to me like as you became interested in this kind of work, and moved into it, you had to sort of blaze some of these trails yourself. You talk about starting several search and rescue groups. You talk about setting up the kind of the Bible or the guidelines for how this would be done, et cetera, and your training. And so what has that been like, not having someone who has necessarily gone before you to show you the way, but you to be the one to figure out the way?
I did figure out a lot of the ways. I did also just travel, Jeff. I would drive around and just go up to a national park, you know, entrance station and say, doesn't someone here do search and rescue? And so I just searched out the people that I knew were doing it, even though they were very far away from me, and just learned as much as I could from them. So, and I love passing that on. I really love to teach, and I don't want all the knowledge that I've been given to be lost. So I really try to help people develop.
Trying to leave a legacy, I guess you could say.
I guess you could say that. And mostly, frankly, it's the legacy of what the dogs have taught me. I've had probably 15, 16 canine partners at this point, and it's astounding what they teach you if you're receptive to it.
Just kind of have to observe, listen, and pay attention, huh?
Exactly. And just honor how incredible their perception of the world is compared to ours. And that's absolutely true, what you said, Jeff, about, you know, your family dog is teaching you every day about what's going on around you. And it's just sort of opening up your eyes and your ears and your heart and listening for what they're trying to teach you. I really think dogs are incredible teachers of the world, what's going on in the world.
Talk about the differences that dogs have, the improved senses, sense of smell and sense of sight in certain cases like night vision and those sorts of things that dogs have that are, and hearing, so far above and beyond what we're equipped with as humans.
And that's what makes them such a valuable search tool to find people. Someone once said that a dog's sense of smell is a little bit comparable to us being able to sit in, you know, the Dodgers stadium or something and pick out someone across the stadium sitting in row 4, you know what I mean, that we know. And, you know, that's pretty good visual acuity.
Yeah.
And dogs have that all the time, you know, with what is going on in the world. And I've definitely had dogs turn to me, lift their nose, smell something, turn to me and go, would you like to learn about this?
Wow.
That was one of my first dogs, Logan. And he was a teacher. And you're right, they're so incredibly agile and fast compared to our ability to move. And their hearing sense is great. You can call out for a lost person. And I hardly listen myself. I just watch my dog, because if somebody responds, they are way more likely to pick it up than I am. So, they're just incredible. They can move through landscapes. And we blunder along with our headlamps and try to keep up with them.
Sure. Our guest is Anne Wickman. Anne has been involved in canine search and rescue for much of her life, and forestry as well at some points in her life. And I understand that when the 9/11 attacks happened in New York City, that you ended up being involved in search and rescue there. Tell us about that experience.
Everybody remembers where they were when the World Trade Center was hit by the planes, I think. And I was actually teaching a class in Seattle to help develop new handlers and new dogs as disaster dogs. So we were asked to just keep teaching that course. And then I came home to Boulder, Colorado, where I worked as a park ranger. And then about 10 days after the event, we were deployed as part of the Colorado Task Force. What they did is rotate the FEMA task forces through the scene, you know, for 10 days or so, and then they move a task force out and bring another one in. So we had a long, long effort there trying to find survivors or the deceased.
If you could, because so many of us listening, there are a few people I know of that were involved. We have one first responder who's involved in the American Legion in Albany, who was one of the first responders there as a member of the fire department in New York at the time, right when the first tower was hit, and he was off and running and was there the whole time. So, you know, we've had some folks, but so many of us were not a part of it, but just watched it from afar on television. What was it like to actually be there and be part of that effort? Any, you know, stories or things you could share about that? I know people would love to hear about that.
When our task force was deployed, there had been some chatter about another attack. And so we were first deployed to Fort Dix and just stayed there for a couple days. And the thing I remember from that, frankly, is a lot of troops were moving through because they weren't sure where they were going. And I just will never forget the youth. I mean, these kids looked like they were 14 to me. They must have been 17 or 18, but
yeah,
their eyes were just wide in fear, of what was going to happen next. And they're clutching their weapons with their helmets on. And I'll just never forget a couple of those faces.
Yeah.
And then when we went to the scene, remember walking around the pile of rubble and debris, and it was still burning at that time. It's probably about 12 stories high. And I just remember, I can't send my dog into that. There's no way.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when we were actually poised at the edge, and a fire chief from New York came up to me and said, are you willing to search this rubble pile? And I said, yes. And it was the most gulp yes I've probably ever said to anything.
Yeah.
And the dogs did just a beautiful job. They got the angst of the scene. They worked through all the emotion that was there, all the hazards, all the debris, all the people that were on the pile. It was a very, very confusing and dangerous search scene for the dogs, and they just did a beautiful job. one fire chief came up to me after we'd been working for a while, and he just sat down with me on the rubble, and he said, thank you. The dogs are finding all the bodies. And having been involved in this for a long time, that is such an easier way for the rescuers, the human rescuers, to be told that, you know, right over there is where you need to look. It just sort of conditions you and eases you into what you're about to have to do. So they really helped. And psychologically and emotionally, the dogs were great as well. I had a priest come up to me and he said, could I hug your dog? I just need some energy, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. So they really fed the whole scene. They were very, very important. One other story that, you know, a scene I'll never forget is as the New York Fire Department firefighters were going in and out in huge numbers, you know, at shift change. Had a young firefighter, a male, came up, and he just came up and knelt next to my dog, Jenner, and he put his arm around him, and he just talked to him, and I was just standing there feeling a little bit in the way, and then the firefighter with his arm around Jenner just looked up at me, had tears streaming down his face, and he said, I lost 13 of my best friends here, and you know, I just gave him a hug, but I think Jenner was one of the first people he told that to. Do you know what I mean? He just he really used I think everybody used the dogs as an expression of just the tremendous grief they were feeling.
So there's at least a couple examples of how Jenner's presence there was helpful beyond just finding remains of humans that were still trapped underneath the rubble. Were you at a point where there were no longer any possible living survivors left? You were just finding folks that had passed away?
That's correct, yeah. Jenner was a live search, a FEMA-certified advanced live search dog, but we just had to say, you know, this is what I need you to find. And they transitioned beautifully and just really, they got it. I don't know how else to describe it. They really got what was going on, and all the dogs were so helpful to that search effort.
So if someone wants to become involved in this kind of work, what's the path that you would take? How do you get involved, and what sort of dog should you look for, and what's the path there?
The dogs that have been most successful in search and rescue are fit and strong and agile and smart and brave, and in a sense, all we're looking for in a human rescuer, all of those qualities, very trainable, very willing to just, in a sense, get into dangerous scenes. And you know, when the dogs went into that horrible rubble pile, they just were fine. I mean, they've been very well trained to do this, and that's one thing that we said with the FEMA system, boy, we put together a training program that actually works, that the dogs could do this worst of worst scenes successfully. In Oregon, I just moved to Oregon a couple months ago, Jeff from Colorado, and in Oregon, to get involved in search and rescue, you have to go through your county sheriff's department, because as it is in Colorado, the sheriffs manage all the search and rescue efforts in the state. And so I've been doing this for a long time, but I'm going to go through the Polk County Search and Rescue Academy starting up here in the next week. And I'm very excited about relearning all my skills, because we all get rusty. And just excited to meet the people and the deputies and the other first responders that are going to be going with us, you know, as we go with the dogs and try to help a scene. And so you need a dog that will fit the possibility. And then it takes generally a year and a half to 2 years to have a dog trained to the point where it could be certified by either the Oregon State standards or by a national standard. There are a number of national standards. And, you know, we really try to, like the FEMA system was a national standard, and that really brought all the different states and the different organizations together. And so, you know, we love the idea of reciprocity is your standard that you have met is very, very similar to the standard that this other team has met. And so you have just a common set of skills and ground rules, you know, all those kinds of things,
which sure.
make a bigger event easier to handle.
I think it says a lot about you, Ann Wickman, our guest, that you're looking forward to being, again, educated in a curriculum that more or less you wrote yourself, you know, back in the day, at least the national standards, the FEMA ones. So that says a lot about you. That's that you're willing to do that and sort of humble yourself, because really, if you wanted to, you could just say, look, I wrote the book, you know, give me a break here. But you're going in and with a happy heart to, again, learn and to meet all these new folks. That's pretty cool.
And that is the thing, Jeff, that I've found is the dogs really engage you in, it's lifelong learning. This search and rescue is so incredibly complex. Every search is different. The terrain is different. The meteorological, you know, aspects are different. The dog feels differently, you feel differently, the scene is different, you know, and so you cannot be the kind of person that goes, I know all this and I'm not going to learn anymore. You have got to stay with it. And I learned things from six-week-old puppies that just go, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're doing that. So it is, and it makes you happy. You're absolutely right. It makes you happy to learn, I think, so.
That's wonderful. Ann Wickman, our guest. Canine Search and Rescue, the topic. And Ann certainly has a long time of experience in doing this. When I say long time, zero me in on how long you have been involved in this. You didn't really allude to the period of time. You just talked about the things you had done. How long have you been at this, my friend?
When I started as a park ranger in 1975. Yeah, I did. I immediately started bringing a dog to work as a work partner, again, because I was by myself and patrolling the backwoods, and I loved their perception, you know, their awareness of what was going around me, which was very, very helpful to me and a big safety aspect of it. And then I just branched out and started learning what they could show me. And, you know, one time, my first patrol dog, and they weren't aggression trained at all, just, you know, just a help as far as what's going on, but
sure.
found a whole cache of like stolen TVs and
really?
Things like that. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, these guys can just do so much that I can't do. And so that's what got me involved with search and rescue. And at that time, there weren't many offerings to get involved in that. And so, you know, I and a couple other people just formed a couple of search and rescue dog groups, which are still going now and have done a lot of wonderful things to serve the community. And that's a tough time. Everybody is pretty overmatched by the complexity of a lost person. And having a dog in the mix really can expand your possibilities for finding. And I think you understand, I'm so impressed particularly with dogs being able to help in a disaster, because it's such an exigent thing, not so much at the World Trade Center, but when we have a building collapse or, you know, anything else that happens in your local area, having a dog that is not afraid of going into a more complex situation and can still use that incredible sense of smell and locate somebody. I mean, we really can save lives as well as in wilderness and avalanche and water search and all the other aspects that the dogs can do and learn.
This has been a lot of fun chatting with you, and the time flew by for me. They say time flies when you're having fun, and it certainly proved true in this particular conversation. Thank you for spending some time with us. And mentioned that if you are interested in finding out what it might take, how you could potentially do this yourself with a dog of your own, if it sounds like something you'd like to do, then you want to get a hold of your county sheriff's department and ask them, is there a particular office in the sheriff's department they should ask for or inquire to?
I think any of the administrative offices will be able to direct a caller to the person that coordinates the search and rescue. And the search and rescue aspects, they have local organizations, teams of dog handlers, because it is kind of specialty training that they probably will refer them to in their county that are up and active and in the community. So, yeah, I think you could call any administrative office of the sheriff and they could direct you the right way.
Perfect. Ann Wickman, thank you so much for your time. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you, Jeff. You too.
My mother had an undiagnosed lung disease. She just wanted to enjoy the rest of her life, whether it meant a couple months or a year or whatever it was. The doctor suggested hospice, and within 24 hours, a team from hospice was at their apartment and just incredible.
Lumina Hospice and Palliative Care. Compassion, comfort, and support for the ones you love. LuminaHospice.org.
God is our refuge and strength, the very present help in trouble. This is Pastor Miller from Bethlehem Lutheran Church in Lebanon. In love for our neighbor's health, we've closed our doors to the public. But join us for our streamed services on Sunday at 10:30 and Bible studies on Sunday at 9 and Thursday at 1 p.m. If you've been saying you're too busy for church, God has cleared your schedule. Find out more at blclebanon.org or by calling me at 541-258-6393.
It's time to take control of your company's transportation costs. PetroCard has been working with commercial companies and their fleets to develop custom fuel management programs for over three decades. Their programs provide access to the two largest cardlock networks in the country, Commercial Fueling Network, CFN, and Pacific Pride. PetroCard operates over 60 stations throughout Washington and Oregon and offers access to over 180,000 stations nationwide. Their fueling stations are open 24/7 and are specifically designed for commercial trucks, making them convenient and easy to navigate. PetroCard fleet cards also reduce unauthorized purchases and prevent theft. You set the approved controls for fuel types, locations, and quantity restrictions, giving you complete peace of mind. Visit them at PetroCard.com or call 1-800-950-3835 and let PetroCard find a solution that works for you. That's PetroCard.com or call 1-800-950-3835 now. PetroCard, more than just fuel.
Problems, the ones nobody talks about at the dinner table. Hungry children, homeless families, neighbors unable to afford their basic needs. We go looking for them, no matter the obstacles, no matter the odds. We surround our community's most critical challenges and we fight. United Way fights for the health, education, and financial stability of every person in our community. Will you join us? Visit UnitedWayLBL.org to learn more or to donate today.
Is your website outdated? Well, you're not alone. Hi, this is Hutch, owner of OneSource Web. Technology changes quickly, and having a dynamic, mobile-friendly site is vital to your search engine rankings. If you need a new website, OneSource Web is your reliable local partner. We specialize in new WordPress sites, redesigns, ongoing website care, and updates. Let us give your site the wow factor it deserves. Online at onesourceweb.com, that's the number one, sourceweb.com, or call 541-570-7518. That's 570-7518. At OneSource Web, we don't just build great websites, we build competitive advantages. We'd love to help you out. That number again is 541-570-7518, 570-7518, or online, onesourceweb.com. That's the number one, sourceweb.com.
Just a few reasons why Jack Apetti's is the caterer you'll want for your next big event. Cost. Not only are they reasonable, but Debbie works with your budget to design the perfect menu to please even the most discriminating guest. Choice. Jack Apetti's offers many different menu options, casual to formal. Service. Set up and serving if you desire, so you don't have to worry about anything except what you're going to wear. For your next event, big or small, let Jack Apetti's make you the successful hostess.
Call 541-926-9660.
In a few years, kindergarten classes will be filled with Liams and Emmas. We will tell you why on the Old Farmer's Almanac Radio Report.
You're home. You're a diabetic. You need supplies, but you don't want to visit the pharmacy. What do you do? Call US Med for home delivery of your supplies. If you have diabetes and you're worried about going to a crowded pharmacy, pick up the phone in the safety and comfort of your home and let US Med deliver them to you with free shipping. And now if you test your blood sugar 4 more times a day and inject insulin 3 or more times a day, you may qualify to get a new continuous glucose monitor at little or no cost, which may eliminate the pain of pricking your fingers and helps you make smarter diabetes decisions. Plus, we'll send you a 90-day supply and bill your insurance company for you. Get some peace of mind. Call US Med today.
800-611-7121. 800-611-7121. That's 800-611-7121.
With more practical tips and useful advice, this is the Old Farmer's Almanac Radio Report for Monday, April 6th, the 97th day of the year. Country singer Merle Haggard was born on this day, and the U.S. entered World War I by declaring war on Germany on this day in 1917. Data compiled from the Social Security Administration and BabyCenter.com reveals 2019's top baby names in America were Liam and Emma. Both have been hovering near the top for several years, along with Sophia, Olivia, Ava, and Isabella for girls, and Noah, William, James, and Oliver for boys. Perhaps the most interesting trends are lower-ranking names that have made the biggest leaps. For boys, Genesis and Saint were big movers. For girls, British royalty-inspired Meghan saw a huge pop, along with a fashion-themed Dior. That is your Old Farmer's Almanac Radio Report. Learn more at almanac.com.
Want to really know more? Just point, click, and learn from the Mid-Valley's best website, KGAL.com.
Welcome back to KGAL's Valley Talk. Many times we've chatted about Albany Helping Hands, the great work they're doing, helping people get their lives back on track and going in a positive direction after having been fraught with difficulty or had circumstances change and folks might lose a home and just are in a position where they never thought they would ever be in their life. And along comes Albany Helping Hands to help put them back on their feet and help them as they make the effort themselves, along with the hand up from Albany Helping Hands, help them to get back going and being productive citizens again. It's what Albany Helping Hands has been doing for a long time. And they have a brand new executive director. Her name is Emma Dean, and she's our guest in this portion of Valley Talk. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning.
Congratulations on your new position. This is a tremendous thing that you're now getting to serve this great organization in a brand new way.
Yes, thank you. I'm really excited about it.
You've been a part of Albany Helping Hands, though, for some time, correct?
Yes, I have. I started here in guest services doing case management with our guests, and then I managed our farm and woodlot for a little while and then was moved into this position as the executive.
When you were growing up, you're the child of a family that we're very familiar with here on KGAL. Lee Matthews Bach, Ed Bach are your parents.
Yes.
Yeah, and of course, Lee for a long time was working for the city of Lebanon, and Ed is a longtime resident. Lee and Ed work with honor flights, helping to honor veterans and just give of themselves to the community all the time. So I'm not surprised that their young person that they raised turns into somebody who's serving others in her occupation as well.
Yeah, I was very lucky and grew up in a home with lots of love and where even if we struggled, we always had enough to share. That was important growing up. We always, even if we didn't have something to share, just being able to love people.
That's wonderful. So talk about, you grew up in the Lebanon, Albany area, right? And I think you were a West Albany Bulldog?
Yes, I grew up in Albany and graduated from West Albany.
What was your life professionally prior to being involved with Albany Helping Hands?
So I spent about 10 years working with adolescents. I worked for Greater Albany Public School District in special education. I did some work with Linn County Developmental Disability Services, worked in some group homes, and worked in a residential inpatient facility. And I kind of thought, like, this is it. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to work with adolescents the rest of my life. It's what I knew, and I loved it. And the best way I can describe it shortly is a couple years ago, God just kind of grabbed me and said, nope, we're going to move you over here. And I was offered a position at the Lighthouse Shelter in Salem through the Salvation Army as the mental health case manager. And that's kind of where my career started, working with our population of people experiencing homelessness. And I have always had a heart for these people, and I just kind of fell into the position and loved it. And this is where God has me, and I've continued to kind of move through different positions as we've gone along.
So how did it happen that you came to the Albany Helping Hands Shelter?
I was no longer working in Salem, and it's so funny. So my kiddos were in school. I wasn't working. I had a trunk full of donations for about a week and finally came into Helping Hands to drop those donations off. Mm. And I was asked, oh, hey, are you this person? They were having interviews for the position, and I said, no, I didn't know you guys were hiring. I'm super interested. I brought my resume in, was interviewed, was a couple weeks later offered the position in guest services, and the rest is history. It just was perfect timing, perfect place, running into the right person, and started in guest services.
So was your transition to becoming the executive director, and let me just remind folks who've just tuned in, we're speaking with Emma Dean, who is the new executive director of Albany Helping Hands. Was your coming into the position of executive director something you expected, and or how did that all come about for you?
It was not super expected. I mean, it kind of happened quickly. I think that ultimately that was a goal that I had for a long time, wanting to be able to direct a shelter because of all of my experience and my passion. I wanted to step into this position. I think I knew at some point it would happen, but how quickly it happened was really exciting, and it just happened quick.
Well, it's going to be great to get to know you as time goes by and chat more about Albany Helping Hands. We're excited for you and happy that you've made it to this particular place in your life. And as the circumstances seem to bear, from the way you've described your path to getting to this point, seems like you were destined to be here, my friend.
Yes, I agree with that.
So let's talk about the brass tack stuff right now. With the COVID-19 virus in full effect and affecting everybody in the world, not just in our nation or our local area, how has it been affecting Albany Helping Hands, and are things different than they were before because of COVID-19?
Yes, things are different for us. We are working really hard to keep everybody here healthy and safe, working to keep our community healthy. So currently, we have had to close down our woodlot and our thrift store. They're not essential. We're trying to minimize exposure to different people. So we've had to shut those things down for the time being. And once we get up and going again, we'll post that information. And at the shelter, we've got a janitorial crew of guests that are just amazing, and they're working really hard to keep everything clean and sanitized, doing lots of hand washing and sanitizing. And we've kind of had to separate our meal time so that we don't have a lot of people in our day room at one time, because monthly we serve over 6,000 meals. So we've kind of broken up our breakfast, lunch, and dinner meal times, so we have less people in the day room, which has worked. And our guests have all been really amazing at being flexible and understanding of the situation. So, you know, there's things that kind of change daily, which I know everyone is experiencing that, but everyone's being flexible, and so far we're doing really well here.
The last time that we spoke with the former director, John Leon, and asked him about how things were going, he was saying that as per normal, you were operating at near capacity as far as how many people you can actually hold and care for and have through your various programs. Is that still the case? Are you still at or near capacity?
Yes, and I would say we're still running, so our dorms are pretty full, which is typical. And that's looking a little bit different right now with COVID-19. But we also have a warming center, which this is about the time of year that we would close that down. But with COVID-19, we have kept that open, and we're minimizing how many people can come in. And we haven't hit our limit there yet, but we're keeping that open, and we don't have a set date to close that because we are wanting to offer an extra spot for people to be during this time.
Emma Dean is our guest. She is the new executive director at Albany Helping Hands. I'm curious how you guys are doing in regards to fundraising and operating budget. Your large fundraiser that you have each year, the big program where you raise more funds than any other particular one effort, I believe it had to be canceled, if I remember correctly, because of the COVID-19. Is that right?
We ended up rescheduling. So right now we're hoping to be able to do that event in September. But again, things are changing daily, so we're just watching and paying attention. And our hope and our goal is to have that event in September. But yeah, that's our biggest fundraiser, our Bridge of Hope. And we're used to having it this time of year, and we were getting all ready and geared up, and we've had to push that out. But our community has been wonderful. Again, new to this position as the executive director, and it has been a true blessing to see how our community has wrapped around us and offered us support, cash donations, donations of things that we need on site, non-perishable foods, hand sanitizer, blankets, clothing for people. It's just been wonderful. And last week, you know, we were starting to run out of our face masks, and Linn County Sheriff's Office donated over 200 homemade masks to us, which was amazing.
Well, it's great to see people step up when others are in need, and in this case, when Albany Helping Hands is in need. What about that financial shortfall? The fundraiser normally would have already happened, and at least some of, if not most of those funds that would have been raised in your big fundraiser that was postponed, those funds have not come in now at this point. They probably would have been there at least to some extent already. So what are you doing in the meantime? And do you need people to step up and help?
Absolutely. Right now we have sent out a letter in the mail and on our Albany Helping Hands Facebook page, and the Democrat Herald as well has sent out an article just stating kind of where we are and what our needs are. And we're seeing donations coming in from that, which is helping us get through this time of not having our big fundraisers and having that fund come in during this time.
Tell me how people can donate. How can they help? What should our listeners do if they're listening and they feel moved to help out with Albany Helping Hands?
So they can mail us a check to Albany Helping Hands at 619 9th Avenue Southeast. They can call the shelter and make an over-the-phone donation. We'll take that. They can go on our website and make a donation. There's a link there for people to click so that they can donate online, which is probably the quickest and easiest way if people have access to that.
And that website is?
AlbanyHelpingHands.com.
So that's the easiest way. Just go to AlbanyHelpingHands.com and click on the link.
Yep, there's a link right at the front of it. Well, see.
If you are the type of person that feels more secure not doing that online and you want to send that check in, I'll repeat that address that Emma just gave. That's 619 9th Avenue Southeast. And is that a 97321?
Yes.
Okay. So it's 619 9th Avenue Southeast, Albany, Oregon, 97321. That would be the address that you would send any donations to if you prefer to do it that way. Or the website, albanyhelpinghands.com. Just click on the link there. So, Emma, you just sort of had a chance to get your feet underneath you. Have you thought at all about the future and potentially things that you'd like to see happen there at Albany Helping Hands?
I have, and it's so interesting because I came in right with one idea of what's the plan, what are we going to do, what is this going to look like, and I've quickly been reminded that I am not fully in charge, and, you know, we've been hit with COVID-19, which has put some things on pause, and I'll say right now what we're doing is we're working really hard here to keep people healthy and safe and just continue to love them and give them shelter and feed them. But moving forward, something we're going to continue to work on is helping people transition, connecting them to the resources they need to help break down those barriers to become self-sufficient. And we're just going to walk through them with that and cheer for them and do whatever they need, connect them wherever they need to be connected as we get to know their story. And another thing we want to work on is building community partnerships because we cannot do it all by ourselves. So we want to be out in the community working with partnerships and supporting other agencies and while they're helping support us as well.
When you say supporting other agencies, what are agencies that you have in mind?
Lynn County Mental Health, Lynn County Drug and Alcohol, Chance is a great one as well. Working with housing, with DHS.
Very good.
All of them. We're getting to know them and trying to all come together. Lynn County Parole and Probation, even our first responders.
That's fantastic. So Albany Helping Hands is not just a place where people can stay when they don't have a home, but it's also a place that makes the effort to train people with the kind of skills they need to go ahead and get back on their feet on their own. And you guys sort of help guide them through that process and give them opportunity to help themselves when they're in a position where they're down and out and probably on their own might not be able to do that exact thing. So talk about life for the typical person, the average person who comes in and ends up living at the shelter temporarily while they get back on their feet. What's it like for them? What sorts of things do you guys do there?
So when someone first comes in, we do their intake, and then we have them meet with guest services within like that first week. And during that meeting, what guest services is doing is, who are you? What's your story? What are your barriers? How can we help you? And even if somebody in that moment isn't able to say, here's what I need, right? Because we don't always know what we need.
Sure.
We're getting to know them, and then we're making a plan. You know, as we get to know these individuals, we're making a plan. Do you need to see mental health? Do you need to go to drug and alcohol treatment? Do you need help creating a resume? Do you need us to help you create a savings plan and help you fill out applications for an apartment? Because everybody's story is different. Everybody's in a different spot. So during that, we're helping connect them and making a plan and helping hold them accountable and cheering for them as they move towards those goals. We also offer job training at our woodlot and at our thrift store and even on site in the offices. So that is something for people that need job experience. They can put us down on their resume, and we're helping give them some of those skills during that time.
Could you talk just for a moment, Emma, about something that I think a lot of us don't stop and think about, or if we do, not often enough, about the fact that many of the folks that you are serving and working with to help them get back and going on their own, many of these folks were very productive and doing well in life and had their own home or had this or that that the rest of us do and were making their way through life when suddenly something happened and bam, everything changed. something they didn't expect. It's not just people who are, let's say, less than active in looking for work, or maybe a little bit lazy, or people that have just been getting by on the system all their lives. It's not just those folks that end up at Albany Helping Hands, but a lot of folks who were, I guess, what we would call productive members of society that had circumstances happen that knocked them down to that place to where they needed some help. Talk about that aspect.
Absolutely. I mean, we have all sorts of different people with different journeys that come through our door. And some of those individuals, life has happened to them just out of nowhere. You know, somebody who had dedicated their adult life to taking care of their parents and their parents pass away. Anything, a loss of a job and going through their savings, medical emergencies. We see all sorts of different stuff. I mean, we obviously, yes, we're working with people that are chronically experiencing homelessness, but we're also working with people that are walking through our doors and life happened out of nowhere, and they need somewhere safe to be while they rebuild, and that's what we're here for.
I'm so glad you're there. So proud of what you guys do. And though, Emma, I don't know if we've met or not, just to know that you've been working sort of behind the scenes there, working hard in so many different departments and aspects of what Albany Helping Hands is all about. And now that you're the executive director, I'm just excited about it. And I can just sense your heart, your servant's heart, as you talk about what you guys are doing. And I know the future is in very good hands, and the future is bright for Albany Helping Hands.
Thank you. We're looking forward to see how things continue to go.
So we have just about 2 minutes left, and I'd love just to let you just sort of run free there for the last couple of minutes and just share whatever you'd like to share with our listening audience as we prepare to close here.
Okay. Well, thank you. Like I said, I'm excited to be in this position and to continue to grow Albany Helping Hands in our community, and to continue to love our guests and cheer for them as they're moving forward. I would encourage, that a lot of people see our homeless community on the side of the road asking for things or just see them. And something that's really important to me that I have carried is I don't always give them money or even food. And whatever you decide to do in that moment is up to you. But something that is really important is this is a community of people that feels unseen and unvalued. And so if you don't feel the desire to give to them or to give them food, if you see them out in our community, even just stopping and acknowledging their presence probably means more to these individuals than anything. I think that's really important. We're happy to be here offering these people support during this time. And we're excited to be working with our community. Like I said, being in this position, especially during this time, just watching our community come together and support everyone has been amazing to see. I come to work daily and I feel blessed and thankful for our community and for our guests here at Albany Helping Hands.
Thank you, Emma. Emma Dean is the executive director at Albany Helping Hands, and it's been our pleasure to chat with her on Valley Talk today. Look forward to chatting with you many more times in the future.
Yes, thank you so much for your time. I enjoyed this.
All right. Thank you. I enjoyed it as well, my friend.
All right.
Emma Dean, executive director of Albany Helping Hands, albanyhelpinghands.com, or you can write to them at 619 9th Avenue Southeast, 97321.
New Horizons In-Home Care is now hiring caregivers in Corvallis, Salem, Eugene, and Florence. With lots of hours available, multiple shifts, and competitive wage scale, apply at any one of their locations in Corvallis, Eugene, Salem, or Florence, Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4, to complete an application and have an on-the-spot interview. For more information, please call 541-752-9059. That's 752-9059. Or visit newhorizonsinhomecare.com.
Did you know your shopping decisions can make a difference in your community? It does with Points for Profit. When you shop locally with our businesses and save your receipts, you help 30 local charities who work to sustain our community. For a complete list, visit pointsforprofit.org and remember, shop locally, serve locally, sustain locally with Points for Profit. This message is brought to you by the following Points for Profit sponsors. Please shop them and save your receipts.
Well, Abbott Valley Productions presents the Home and Garden Shows every spring and fall. Watch for them and you'll be able to see fresh ideas for the backyard and indoors alike.
Northwest Apparel and Graphics in downtown Lebanon can help you with screen printing, embroidery, signs and banners for one or more product with no setup fees.
Bi-Mart Pharmacy and Bi-Mart Stores are Northwest grown and employee owned. And with 75 stores to serve you, Bi-Mart delivers more value every day for only $5 for a lifetime membership.
The Army National Guard plays a vital role in your community. We're on the front lines supporting essential personnel, first responders, law enforcement, and medical professionals, delivering food, supplies, and medicine, keeping communities safe, making a difference. During emergencies, we're always ready, always there. Learn more about part-time service in the Army National Guard at nationalguard.com.
Sponsored by the Oregon Army National Guard, aired by the Oregon Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Political conventions were once places where presidential nominations were decided. In a moment, we catch the intriguing story of a man who led Abraham Lincoln for the presidential nomination, a man who could have very well become the great emancipator himself. The story is this edition on the American Countryside. A Farm in the Countryside podcast, we're talking about the stories, tips, and trends affecting agricultural and rural America. What can you expect in the markets? How do you evaluate new technology? What are the latest trends when it comes to successful crop and livestock operations? Those topics and many more are our weekly focus with guests from across the nation. Farm in the Countryside is brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Find the Farm in the Countryside podcast on the AgriTalk app or just use your favorite podcast platform. And you can follow our show on Facebook. Catch Farm in the Countryside for a weekly look at the stories affecting rural and agricultural America.
A social distancing tip.
Keeping your distance from others is important in slowing the spread of coronavirus. So here are some fun things to do alone. Read a book, take a walk, unpack your suitcase from that trip you took last September, paint a self-portrait, catch up on a TV series, do a puzzle. Remember, we should all stay home to lower the risk for everyone. For more info, visit coronavirus.gov.
Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Most people today can tell you little about one of the most prominent presidential candidates from about a century and a half ago, a man named William Seward.
He came to Auburn as a result of having met a young woman named Frances Miller, becomes a law partner in Frances's father's law firm, and a year later gets up the courage to ask her dad for her hand.
Peter Wisby says Seward was a successful lawyer and used that fame to help him win in politics. In the mid-1800s, it was the words of Seward that newspapers in the North and South printed.
He was very well known as a U.S. senator in the 1850s, and so in 1860, he thought he was ready to run as a candidate for the presidency as a Republican.
But his activism as an abolitionist made him a polarizing candidate, one the convention thought might not be able to win the general election.
The delegates, getting a little worried about his chances of success in the general election, began to look around for somebody a little less well-known. They choose Abraham Lincoln.
Neither Seward nor Lincoln attended that convention. It was considered poor taste at the time, so both waited in their respective hometowns to get word from the proceedings. The telegram sent to Seward initially indicated it would be he, not Lincoln, representing the Republicans in 1860. In Seward's hometown of Auburn, citizens anxiously awaited word that their local hero had won the nomination.
The people in Auburn had gotten a cannon and they had wheeled it out and they were going to fire it off when their adopted son got the nod. And when that fifth telegram came across, they just sort of wheeled the cannon back unfired.
Seward was selected by Lincoln to serve as Secretary of State. In that position, he probably earned his widest fame as the man who purchased Alaska. That's next time.
Your first choice in local news, sports, and smart talk. This is News Talk 1580 KGAR.